Virtually not a day or week goes by without some new report of a sex scandal of some powerful politician, movie star, producer, or business leader, or even sometimes a church leader falling. We're going to talk about this right now in this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Mark Laser, who is the head and founder of a group called Faithful and True, and their website is faithfulandtrue.com, and is spelled out A-N-D. Dr. Laser, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, I've been looking forward to it, so I'm glad to be with you.
Okay, for those not familiar with it, what is Faithful and True?
Well, Faithful and True is a number of different things. It represents our ministry in all areas, the speaking and teaching ministry, the training ministry, and then the writing ministry that we have, and then also here in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, we have a counseling center, and sometimes we bring men in from all over the country to go through workshops about sexual purity and that kind of thing.
Hmm. And if you don't mind, go ahead and tell us your own story, in a brief version of it, but how that relates to this.
Well, in your introduction, you were talking about fallen pastors, and I am one of those. I was ordained back in my early 20s, and but I also got a PhD in Christian counseling, so I was working in a Christian counseling center, and my sexual activities and addiction really were escalating, and so finally I got intervened on in 1987 and sent off to kind of classic inpatient treatment, and got sober from all of that stuff in March 17th, 1987, and that was 30 years ago, so, that's my sobriety birthday, and God has just really led me in a ministry to help other men break free of, the cycle of addiction.
Hmm. Okay, so what's going on? I mean, I would think people from the outside of our country might look at the headlines, especially since the breaking of the Harvey Weinstein story, in October.
Right.
And it just seems like, wow, there's virtually not a day or so or that goes by without some new story.
Well, I think what we're seeing is kind of a national catharsis of kind of a male-dominated or patriarchal, what we would say, culture in which, men have been used to abusing their power. And I think it reflects the moral depravity of our general culture that I think, we can trace back to its roots, primarily, I mean, some of the sexual abuse stuff is as old as, Old Testament days.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of, our original sin nature. But I think it's largely due to, men who are, very self-centered, sometimes say narcissistic, just, abusing their power. And it's a totally selfish act. And I think what we're experiencing is that women have been keeping it silent out of their own shame for really centuries. And they're being emboldened now, finally, to come forward. And, we're just seeing a national explosion of this. And I think it has needed to happen. And we're really going to have to look at some cultural shifts here. So, powerful thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. In the Bible, in the New Testament, in Ephesians specifically, Paul says, on the one hand, he says, wives, submit to your husbands. And I know that statement can be abused and in some cases has been abused. But he also turns around and says, husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. I think if couples would put these, these ideas into practice, some of this would be avoided, I'm sure.
Well, you have to go back with that passage to, because that's Ephesians 5. And, the opening of Ephesians 5 basically says we're supposed to be like dearly loved children and lead a life of love just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for the church. So basically the whole chapter there really needs to be seen in the perspective of being Christ-like, toward our spouse and being willing to sacrifice for our spouse. And it goes both ways. But yes, many, many countless numbers of men have taken the part about the wife's submission and like you said, just abused it. So.
But I think if you love your wife like Christ loved the church, my goodness, I mean, that would preclude a lot of this stuff. Now, let's talk about the culture at large. Now, obviously, there's plenty of blame to go around, but it doesn't help to have a pop culture that just, you know, glorifies sex outside of marriage in virtually, you know, every venue you can think of.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's a culture-wide problem in terms of the moral depravity, I don't know how else to put it, of our culture and the messages that have been promoted in our entertainment industry, even in politics. Yeah. I mean, you know, when a president, Bill Clinton, can basically commit an act of sexual assault in the Oval Office, and his approval rating when he leaves office is still very high. You know, what does it say about what our culture has tolerated over the years? And, you know, any moral ethic that this country was built on has long disintegrated. So,
yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, just to take an example, you read a lot of these stories through internet-based news outlets. And so, mm-hmm. On the one hand, the big, you know, politician, blah, 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 you know, and then on the other hand, you look on the margin and you'll see a lot of stories that are, they're not even stories, it's little photographs or whatever, you know, so-and-so shows off her assets or whatever. I mean, you see this, especially it seems like from the you know, the outlets from England or something, and it's like, there's not even a hint of Puritanism left over there.
Well, you know, I think Puritanism, you know, is always something that when we say that word, I think we've been taught to consider that a negative thing. But I do think
it's not.
If you start talking about the fact that, you know, women are immodestly dressed, you know, you're going to get criticized as being anti-feminist. But even in our churches, I think that, you know, women, if they're just following the current fashions, which many of them do, church is not even a safe place to go. And, you know, I think our pastors out there are kind of afraid to preach about a sexual morality, and they don't want to be interpreted as being patriarchal or antiquated or, you know, puritanical, you know, that kind of thing. So
yeah,
we need
but
a lot more teaching about God's plan for healthy sexuality. That is for sure.
You know, by the way, sociologist Dr. Rodney Stark of Baylor University, who's done a lot of great research on the kind of the sociology of applied Christianity. And in one of his books, I believe it's the one called America's Blessings, where he just sort of shows how America's really religiosity has contributed a lot. But he talks about the Puritans and their sex life. And he said that the Puritans likely had, you know, better, more fulfilling sexual lives than modern Americans do. And he talks about it, and he gives specific reasons why and footnotes, et cetera.
Well, you know, there's been a number of studies. I know the University of Chicago came out with a big sexuality survey, and they found that couples that were practicing monogamy were the ones that reported the greatest fulfillment in their sex life than those that were not being monogamous or had multiple sexual partners. So, you know, we know that God's plan for monogamy is the way to experience the greatest fulfillment, but, you know, the church has just not been able to teach that, I think. I'm trying to promote it, you know, that pastors out there learn how to teach, you know, God's plan for sexuality, which is about monogamy, and it's certainly about, you know, if you look at the Ephesians 5 passage again, I think it's really about, you know, at the end he talks about, you know, husband and wife being a one flesh union, and spiritually and emotionally, sex is always meant to be an expression of the spiritual intimacy of a couple. So we're not teaching that enough.
Yeah. Okay. John 8, the woman caught in adultery. Jesus says, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. I think about that sometimes when I read these stories about the sex scandals, but then also to the woman herself, he said at the end, go and sin no more. So this kind of two-pronged message. Your comments?
Well, you know, I think it's a wonderful story, as so many of the stories about Jesus is in those mid-chapters in John, of, you know, God's grace, you know. to me, I like John 4, where he's talking to the woman at the well, too, and she's been married 5 times and is currently living with another guy. She's the one that Jesus reveals for the first time that he is the Messiah. And so there's a couple of stories of God's grace toward women there in John. And, you know, the one in John 8 is just, you know, we're all in this together. I mean, none of us is without sin. And so we need to be very careful in being judgmental. And yet at the same time, we need to teach a very strict sexual morality.
It's sad to see Christians or professing Christians among some of those who have been caught in this, you know, these recent scandals and some of those falling, or at least accusations thereof.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. But it's, you know, there's been other studies that have shown that, you know, Christians that are raised in rigidly black and white homes, they're more likely to engage in addictions of all sorts. So we're not, you know, we have to be very careful, and this teaching about sexual morality, you know, needs to come from an internal motivation, which is a deeply, deeply spiritual and committed to Christ-based morality, I think.
Yeah. Okay, we have a few minutes left. Let's just talk solutions.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've just been having to think about this. I don't know what people out there, your listening audience, thinks about President Trump, but he is evidently a committed Christian, and he's established an advisory committee of Christian counselors to advise him on, you know, these kinds of questions of sexual morality and mental health and that kind of thing. So, and I've been placed on that committee, so I've been getting briefings from the White House about, you know, what the president is thinking, and some of us have been challenged to come up with solutions to that. And I think, you know, one of the main solutions is that at all levels of the church, particularly to the youth and youth groups, we need to do a better job of not just teaching them the don'ts, you know, they always know that, but creating in them a vision of what healthy sexuality is all about. So, you know, we've always told them, and we have movements, wait until marriage to have sex, but we don't tell them why that's important. And so I think we need, just church-wide, we need a lot more teaching about this. We need our pastors preaching about it from the pulpit. It's not just a matter of sexual education. It's a matter of giving the spiritual reasons why monogamy works, why it's so much more fulfilling than anything else.
Yeah, and how marriage is a picture ultimately of Christ and the church.
Right, exactly.
How about a comment on the issue of accountability?
Accountability is really where it's at. And the average Christian, I think, is not in accountability. And if they say they are, it's probably limited to perhaps one accountability partner. I published a book a number of years ago called The Seven Principles of Accountability, based on the book of Nehemiah, and accountability is where it's at. And I think all of us, men and women alike, need to have at least 5 to 10 people in our life who are almost talking to us daily and asking us serious questions about our commitment, our vision, what we're doing, what we're not doing. Basically building a community. I think if we're going to stand against the cultural assault, you know, we need to stand in unity with each other in accountability groups.
You know, it would be better to invest in something like that than to find yourself, your picture, you know, your reputation, you know, on the evening news or whatever. I mean, I can't imagine how awful it would be to go through something like that. And you had a taste of it, you know, on a much smaller level. But, you know, imagine one of these national figures where they're drummed out of office or something like that. Concluding thought, 20 seconds or less.
If you're struggling with these issues, the greatest thing to do is be courageous enough to reach out for help. And there's plenty of places like ours that you can find that help. You can find healthy, accountable community. And whatever Satan is telling you about not ever being able to break free of this, that's a lie. So you can get out of this.
Excellent. Faithfulandtrue.com. Dr. Mark Laser. Laser is spelled L-A-A-S-E-R. Is that right?
That is right.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. Okay, God bless.
It's nice to be with you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.